Hey there, we are Rob and Joanna Tigan. Welcome back to the Growing Home Together podcast. We've been married for over 30 years and we've parented our five kids through all the ages and stages. We're excited to share our passion for caring for the soul of your family with you. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey friends, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast today. 10 years ago, Rob and I had the incredible joy and privilege of adopting our youngest son through the foster system in our state. And he had been a part of our lives for over 2 years by then, and our family was completely and totally in love with this little boy. From where we were sitting, the future looked bright. But, you know, it wasn't long before we realized how much we didn't know about the trauma that a child suffers when they're separated from their birth parents. And over the past 10 years, our son has experienced emotions and struggles that we never saw coming. Rob and I are in just a perpetual state of learning and growing in how to best care for and support our son.
Yeah, and maybe today you're wondering how to help your child heal from trauma, or maybe you're wondering what it might be like to welcome a child into your home through foster care and adoption. Maybe you have friends or family in your life who you want to better understand and support. If so, we are so excited to welcome today's guest, Jenny Lord, to the show. Jenny is an adoptive parent, and she's the founder of Chosen, the organization committed to empowering parents and fostering children's trauma recovery. We know that we are going to be encouraged by Jenny's wisdom today. So thank you, Jenny, for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am so overjoyed to be with you. I have to say, I've done a lot of podcast interviews, but this is the first one I've done with a couple. So I'm really intrigued by the format and know we're going to have a good time. I do want to share with the audience, I'm actually not an adoptive parent. I'm an adopted sister. I have a sibling who was adopted out of foster care. So I have four biological kids, and my husband and I have also fostered in the past, but we have not adopted.
Oh, I'm sorry that I misunderstood that.
No problem.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, we really would love to get to know you better. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about your family and how did you become passionate to help kids and families heal from trauma?
Absolutely. So I have one husband. We have been together for 20 years and I have four biological kids, 18, 17, 16, three girls. And then my son is 13. So we are in the throes of fun teenage years. And I say that truthfully, I love this phase with my kiddos. It is extremely busy, but it is a joy to watch them grow and develop and find their footing and learn their identity and just see their brains shaping. So that's a little bit about my family. I got started in this space. Well, the Lord knew. As I mentioned, I have a brother who was adopted out of foster care. He came into our home when I was a freshman in college. I was 19 and he was 19 months old. And that marked my life tremendously. His adoption took 4.5 years to complete. So it was all of my college journey was going through that process and seeing the inside of the child welfare system up close and personal, bird's eye view. And that really ignited a passion in me. And it was several years after college when the Lord opened the door to start pursuing this space vocationally. But that's a little bit of the background.
That's great. Joanna shared a little bit about the, you know, the lack of understanding we had about our son's trauma and his past when we were going through the adoption process. Can you give us a little insight about how separation from birth parents can affect kids, their, you know, both their minds and their bodies and their spirit?
Yeah, it's a big question. And certainly a question that we did not fully understand as a family. When my brother came into our home, it was 1995, and the 90s would later become what we now call the decade of the brain, where neurological research was being done to show the effects of trauma on the brain. But we had no understanding of that at the time. And it would be many years before that was mainstream knowledge. And the reality is, you know, trauma is a word that's thrown around a lot today. Veterans have trauma, and I joke that my dog has trauma when we leave town, you know, and that's how casually it's used. But in our space, the way that I think about trauma, there's abuse, perhaps neglect or abandonment that show up in a child's story, But underneath that, there is loss. The separation from the family that God, you know, if a child was birthed into a family and then they're separated, that is a loss. And even though adoption is beautiful, it is birthed out of loss. And so at some point, even if a child is adopted at birth, at some point that loss is going to surface and there's going to be questions and a time where the loss has to be grieved. And so that loss comes with pain. And we just didn't understand the effects of that. I don't think even as a society, we didn't understand that even 20 years ago, 10 years ago, when we were and just how the child welfare system is shaped. I think we took it lightly because we see a child now in a home like yours where they have the opportunity to thrive and grow. And it's easy to overlook really the effects of that. And it, as you said, not just the heart, but the mind, the body, and the soul. The body stores trauma and loss, and which is, we can get into some of the details of that, but it does affect the whole person.
Can you give us some examples of how trauma might show itself in the way a child experiences emotions or the kind of behaviors they might display at school or at home with their family?
Sure. So I'll give you an example from a family that our organization has served just recently. I learned about a three-year-old who was having really big behaviors. I mean, no surprise there, right? 3 years old. I know we had some big behaviors in my home with tantrums and so forth, but these were a little bit beyond what we would call typical, and to the point of the child was showing, you know, extreme aggression and unable to regulate. What I mean by that is it wasn't just a 10-minute tantrum. It would go on for, you know, 60, 90 minutes to where the child would just collapse in exhaustion and couldn't be comforted, could not gain control or regulate his emotions. And the parents were really struggling to know how to help him, even though they had biological children and, you know, felt like they were skilled, knowledgeable in parenting. And the reality is that child had been separated from his birth family, had been in the system, and some of the behaviors that he was exhibiting likely were things that he had witnessed because of the forms of aggression that we were seeing. And, you know, kids, we know this, kids repeat, replicate behaviors that they see. And so when there's been domestic violence or any kind of exposure like that, we often see that show up in a child's behaviors. But one of the overarching symptoms and ways that I would say it shows up in young children is that inability to regulate. And what I'm regulate just means calm down. It's gain control over your own mind and emotions and the ability to do that. And with a, you know, a young child who has been birthed into our family, maybe we've had that time to co-regulate where we have shown them over and over again that we're going to come when they're scared. We're going to come when they're upset. We're going to come to them when they need help or nurturing or they're hurt. Somebody continues to show up. Well, for kids who have trauma histories, you know, hard histories, they may not have had that consistency of a parent, a caregiver that's always going to show up in the middle of the storm. And they learn that might teach them to learn survival skills where they're trying to learn how to regulate their emotions by themselves. God has created us. If you just think about an infant, it's the same thing that I was just describing. When an infant cries, typically mom, you know, in the middle of the night, mom gets up. My husband definitely helped with this as well, but somebody's going to go to that child, that baby, when they're crying to meet their needs, change their diaper, feed them, et cetera. We show that consistency over and over again. But for the kids that we're talking about, they haven't had that. And so they have not learned to regulate their own emotions well. And in addition to that, when a child's needs are not met, that releases cortisol, which is a stress hormone in their body. And the kids that we see in our work, they have cortisol, elevated cortisol levels, where their body's living in a state of fight, flight, or freeze all the time. they're in an alerted state. And that may not be visible as a parent from the outside, but they are living with that. And that can cause some really big behaviors as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, our son is 13 now. I some of what you're saying is ringing a bell of when he was little. But what are maybe some of the more typical behaviors or emotions that might show up in a teenager?
What we like to share with our families is we know that trauma is developmental. And what that means is that it shows up as a child develops at different stages of life. And entering adolescence, that's a big time where youth are learning about their own identity. They have questions about their identity, where they came from. They're starting to really learn and have the ability to understand complex concepts. Typically, I'm saying typically, it depends on, you know, if they have a history of trauma that could be delayed entering that phase of adolescence. What I mean by that is they could be 16, but they're acting more like an 11 or 12 year old because some of those early developmental milestones were missed. We often see that. But with a youth who has that type of history in the home, sometimes they don't even understand what they're feeling. They may not be able to articulate it, or they may have questions, I remember this with my own brother when he was a teenager. They want to know about their birth family, but they don't want to hurt the family they're living in. And just that tension alone of how do you deal with that? How do I want to know where I came from, which is a natural question, but I don't want my mom and dad to be upset with me that, or think that I love them less because I want to know about that. Now, those are big things to try to figure out in your head. And they may not even be aware of some of those questions, but it's very natural entering into adolescence and teenage years to have questions around identity.
That makes a lot of sense. So what are some just practical ways that we can maybe create a safe place for our kids to confide in us with those questions and those feelings? Like, are there certain things that we can do to kind of keep the communication channels open?
There are. And one of the things that I love that our staff helps some parents with, sometimes kids don't really want to talk about big feelings. I know you said your son's 13, my son's 13. I mean, talking about feelings, like, that's not really,
right.
He's not signing up for that. But sometimes they can write. You could have a shared journal where you give them permission to just ask any question or write anything down that they may not feel comfortable talking about. And then you can share back and forth some things that can create a safe place. But I often think that what is most helpful is just to open up the conversation with, hey, you know, we can talk about anything, right? And I'm going to answer your questions as best I can. And if you have questions about your birth family, like, I want to help you navigate that. I'm sure that you do. And just by creating that safe opening instead of a threatened posture, you know, they may not seize the opportunity then, but recognizing later down the road, mom made a safe place or dad made a safe place for this, and I can talk with them about anything. And my oldest daughter, she's very independent. I was the oldest of four kids, and she and I are a lot alike, so I understand her. But she tries to do a lot of things on her own. And sometimes when she is doing things that her parents could help her with, I just say, hey, Emerson, you don't have to do that by yourself. You know that dad and I can help you figure out this budgeting thing. Like, we can work on that together. And sometimes when there's, you know, that's natural with teenagers, but I think reminding them like, hey, I'm here for you. You don't have to do it alone.
That's really helpful. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I would say from our own parenting experience in the foster and adoption world, and also with other adoptive families we've talked to, you know, we learned pretty quickly that the parenting strategies that you might use with your biological kids don't always work in the same way with kids that are going through trauma. So Why don't the reward and consequence work the same way? I mean, how is that different?
Yeah, great question. And this was our family's experience as well. My mom felt like she had raised three teenagers successfully. She had more love to give, and she knew how to parent. And, you know, we hear that all the time. We see often even empty nesters that enter into this space and their kids are doing great, but the tactics don't work the same. And before I get to rewards and consequences, I'll just say this. Many of us are parenting how we were parented. I know that was the story for me. And through our work, through Chosen's work, I actually learned a new way of parenting that I had not really seen or heard anyone talk about before. I was raised more in the type of family like, you do what I say because I'm the parent, and more authoritative in that way, and not really questioning, not really open to questions of when you're just supposed to obey. In fact, I was the church that we were in when my children were young. There was a common theme that was shared in that church: obey right away with a happy heart. Well, that sounds great, but I mean, do we do that as adults?
Not very often.
Obey right away with a happy heart, and meaning just do what I say. And, you know, the way that I now know is more effective is really to pursue connection with my child over obedience. And that prioritizing that connection is actually what is going to bring about trust, where a child wants to listen to you or is more apt to listen to you versus you're just the authority figure. Now, especially if you've adopted out of foster care, I mean, the adults in a child's life up to that point have failed them. They have learned that I can't trust the adults in my life. So why are they now going to trust you just because you look like a safe place? That doesn't necessarily mean that their bodies feel safe. So that's the first thing, is just pursuing connection. But the other reason that I have learned that rewards and consequences don't necessarily work with this population is trauma affects executive functioning. And as executive functioning is just, it's the place in our brain that the amygdala, where, and not to get too technical, but basically where you understand logic and reason, is like, no, this isn't safe for you to have these types of behaviors, and you can't rationalize necessarily. And then if you attach rewards and consequences to that, and executive functioning is impaired from trauma, there is just not going to compute. So it's not effective. And you know, the other thing about that is sometimes some of the youth, especially kids who are a little bit older, who maybe had experienced more years of trauma, the idea of rewards and consequences was probably colored by their home environment. And what I mean by that is what they were rewarded or received consequences for may not have necessarily been healthy. So again, that trust is impaired, where that's not going to be an effective way for you to actually get the results that you want with that child.
That makes a lot of sense. So it sounds to me like we need some discernment to maybe figure out what is driving our kids' behavior. And I love that you use the word connection, because that is the word that just jumps off your website at me, and how connection makes such a difference in kids' healing. But in this area of what we're talking about, a scenario we might find at our home is that, you know, because of what our son has gone through, that might affect focus, it might affect motivation, it might affect his confidence at school. And so then I'm getting the email from the teacher like, hey, you know, he's behind on his assignment. And your kind of knee-jerk reaction can be, well, what are we going to do to get that assignment handed in? And it can go really negative really fast. So in a situation like that, it's just a normal day-to-day thing. What would you speak into that?
Yeah, great question. And actually, something very similar just happened to me this past week. My son, I got an email from two of his teachers the same day on Friday, which is unusual. And one of the emails was they had a test during class and he didn't turn it in. And she realized it after the class and she called him back in and said, "Hey, what's going on?" He was like, "I just didn't feel motivated to do it." She wasn't sure what to do. Who feels motivated to take a test? Not a lot of us, right? And so I get these two emails. I was frankly a little upset. And when he got home, I'll be transparent. My nature would have been like, "What are you doing? Like, why am I getting to know?" So if I would have gone at him from a combative posture, he would have just shut down. So I just said, "Hey, bud, what's going on?" And using curiosity is one of the things that creates connection. Instead of that posture of like me fighting, like, "Hey, this is unacceptable," which is what I was thinking. "This is unacceptable." Using curiosity of, "Hey, what's going on?" And he lost a friend in a tragic ATV accident in January. And we had not experienced anything like that as a family. It was a very close friend of his. And we're learning to navigate grief. And he just was having an off day thinking about his friend. He couldn't focus. And because I started with curiosity of just trying to figure out what was going on with him, because it wasn't typical, then he was able to open up and just share with me a little bit. And that led to a conversation of, you know, talking to him about advocating for himself. The youth that was passed away went to their school also, so the whole school has been affected. And he doesn't know how to advocate for himself with these teachers to say, "I'm really struggling. I'm thinking about my friend. And I feel so sad. I can't focus." He can't articulate that. And so we had that led to a conversation about what that might look like to allow somebody in to see what's going on.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I know your organization does a lot to help kids and families in their struggles. And so can you maybe give us a story of how you've come alongside some parents and help them with their children with these big emotions and in a way of connection?
Sure. So I was just with one of our families that we served last year. I was recording a little mini documentary with the family this past weekend and learned more about their story. They worked with a care manager on our team for about 8 months, navigating some really big things. This family had adopted 3 kids out of foster care in 2015. So they adopted a sibling group and they were going to open their home again for foster care about 6 years later. And they got a call from a mutual friend who said, "There's another sibling group who's coming into foster care. And it's a really hard case that there was a sibling that passed away in the home. And there were 2 boys who needed a new place to live. They had been in a shelter for 90 days. And in Texas, where I live, 90 days is the max. And so they were really trying to find a place for these boys." The boys were 8 and 10. And the family that we ended up serving, you know, that was not what they thought they were opening their home to. But as they prayed about it, they really felt like that they were supposed to say yes to the boys, and got to meet with them and spend a little bit of time with them before they were officially placed. But these boys had been through just horrific experience and had some medical needs themselves. They had not been in school for over a year. So they were behind academically, and we weren't even sure all that they had been through. But this family, they were, what I would call trauma-informed. They had, you know, they were living it out, had been raising other kids with hard histories, but this was kind of new territory for them, dealing with such a huge loss in the lives of the boys. And one of the boys, this story is so beautiful. One of the big things that our team worked with this family on was just what we started out talking about today, regulating big behaviors. When the youngest child would get upset, he would just completely melt down. And there were 60-minute episodes just falling apart, causing havoc. And I think that's exhausting for any parent. I know I'll speak for myself. That kind of thing just wears me out. I would just want to go take a nap when it was over. And so we were working with mom on how to help him regulate his own emotions. And what she had started doing with him was, instead of trying to control it or talk him out of it, talk him down, when he was on the floor, she would just get down on the floor with him, which just demonstrates, like, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I'm with you in this. And so she had been doing that. And the story that really particularly stood out to me was, they had been in the home for about 6 months, which is not a long time in navigating such history. But they had been in the home about 6 months. And one day he was having a meltdown. She got on the floor with him, and he noticed she had teared up. And she told me, "Jenny, I was just exhausted. I just was exhausted." And he noticed that she had teared up, and he went and sat in her lap and completely calmed down. And the reason that story is so powerful, and don't miss this, is because he was not only learning how to receive care, he was learning how to give care. He became a comfort to her in her own distress. And with kids who have hard histories, empathy and recognizing someone else's emotions and being able to meet a need, that's a really big deal. And so for him to not only be able to regulate himself in the moment, he helped co-regulate with her, and it was over. And so that was just really powerful. And I think if we had not worked with mom on helping him to regulate and just being really present instead of trying to shut it down, I don't know that that would have happened in such a short time.
That is really powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, I'm thinking about that mom, and then, you know, if she's married, what that would be like as a couple to parent a child with those traumatic experiences. And I know, I mean, in any parenting, it takes a while to learn how to parent as a team sometimes, because the stress is real. It can be hard to figure out the steps to take to help your child. What word of advice could you give to a couple to keep their marriage strong when there's tough seasons of parenting?
Well, I'm so glad that you asked about this. We oftentimes, in reality, we oftentimes see families come to us and their marriage is falling apart because the stress from trying to navigate the traumatic behaviors in a home, it affects everyone. And certainly when you've got a child who is needs a lot of attention and has really big needs, sometimes you can neglect the needs of your marriage, right? So this particular mom, they actually, the parents came to us together. And the way that we work with clients is generally on a weekly basis. And we have a specific action plan that's been developed to meet the needs in their home. We're working through that action plan on a weekly basis, helping them to make the necessary changes in their home to meet their child's needs and to just be healthier. And so we don't always get to work with mom and dad together, but we certainly encourage that. We have a telehealth model, which allows parents to, you know, if there's two working parents, they can meet us together over Zoom and at the same time and be learning the same practices. Prioritizing connection over correction is not, it's not intuitive necessarily. And when I say it, because that's how God is with us, he pursues connection over correction with us first because he wants our hearts, right? When I say it like that, it probably is like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it's not necessarily intuitive if you haven't seen it. And so sometimes one parent is like pursuing that connection and the other parent is like, this is completely unacceptable. He can't act this way. And, you know, they may have it, they may not be operating from the same parenting manual. And really, we talk about co-leadership in the home. You're the leaders, you're the co-parents, the co-leaders of the home, and being on the same page is really critical. So if at all possible, we encourage parents to do the work together so that they're learning the same techniques and they're on the same page and not just being permissive in parenting, but really pursuing their child's heart.
That's great. Yeah, I have to say your organization just sounds amazing. I know we've had some great support along the way, and our journey was similar, it sounds like, to your family with your brother. I think we were about 3.5 years in the foster and adoption before it was finalized. And, you know, we did have great support along the way, but it just sounds like your organization supports families and kids and in a very unique, special way. Again, focusing on that connection at all points. So I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for saying that. You know, we found a niche, I would say, and really the origin was we had been in the space organizationally for several years, and we're seeing families falling apart across the country who had gone into it with the best of intentions, many times felt like God called them into it, and then it got so hard that we were seeing families quit and not able to keep going. And then, you know, the child, it has to move. And then that's another trauma that they're experiencing, which was just heartbreaking for me. And so my question was, you know, who's walking with the families long-term to help these kids heal and to make sure that families stay together? And we developed a model out of that. And the model, and there's lots of trauma-informed, we call it trauma-responsive, and there's a reason for that. There's lots of organizations that are doing pieces of what we do, but what we have found is that parents and caregivers need help real time. They need practical help in the moment, and you can have a lot of training, but then when you have the actual child with actual big needs in front of you melting down and you're not regulated either, you're getting triggered, it becomes very difficult to actually apply what you maybe learned in training a year ago. And it's that real time support and the support to make the necessary changes for the adult that actually affects the child's behaviors is huge.
Yeah, 100%. You know, a lot of what we're talking about today are the challenges inside the home, but I know you have a wider view and understanding of the systemic challenges we face in our country when it comes to helping foster and adoptive kids. So how would you describe what's gone wrong and what we really need?
Great question. I'm very passionate about this. When I was going through the experience with my brother, I couldn't have articulated it then. But I knew I wanted to get to the root causes of the problems that I was seeing. And what I mean by that is I was witnessing a system, a child welfare system that's designed to protect kids that sometimes brings them harm. And I could see how kids were falling through the cracks. And that just was unacceptable to me, intolerable, really. I'm wired for justice and was so grievous. And now what I understand almost 30 years later is the child welfare system was built around the child's physical safety. That is the priority. If you know this, both of you know this, and I know this going through the foster care training process, when we were getting licensed, they're looking at your spices to make sure they're not expired. They're asking where the medications locked up, where is, you know, the guns and ammunition, if you live in Texas, where is that? And is the child safe from that? Who's going to be in your home? Are your electrical sockets plugged? They're not talking to you about the well-being of the child. And I think that our system of care, where there's just been an epic failure, is the focus on child welfare alone. We have got to take a wider view. A child is, by design, created to be in a family. So we have to look at the holistic family needs, not just the child needs. And we have to look at the whole person needs, not just the physical safety, but the psychological safety, the emotional well-being. And we have just taken that out of the equation. I really think there has to be a paradigm shift to child and family well-being. And if we approached it from that vantage point, I think policies would change, procedures would change, And ultimately, the results would change. I think it would even change the way that we're approaching biological families who enter into the child welfare system if we had a more holistic view looking at the well-being, the health and well-being, because nobody wakes up one day and says, I want to be separated from my kids. And the system that's designed around parents when that is their story, you know, the things that we're asking parents to do to potentially get their kids back are often woefully inadequate to really meet the wellness, health and wellness needs of what can hold that family together.
Well, we're grateful to you for the work that you're doing to bring awareness of that. So thank you. You know, I'm pretty sure that we have listeners today who are listening to this episode because they want to be more trauma informed, because they are wondering and praying about what it might look like to open their home to a child. So what would be just even one thing that you would want them to know as they're making that decision?
Well, we've had a very honest conversation today about some of the challenges that come with that decision. And I think my encouragement is always to do your due diligence in connecting with families around you who you may know that have been through this process, to learn from their experience before you make a decision. You want to have that informed decision, and you need to understand the challenges that come with it and what people have navigated who've gone before you. And it's not to detract from someone's potential decision to make that, but you just want to be informed.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And like Rob said, Chosen is just an amazing organization. And we were hoping that you could just tell us more about how you serve parents and kids. Like if there's a family who's listening today who wants some guidance on next steps in their parenting, how can they find you online and what are they going to find when they get there?
Great. So our website is chosen.care. And I like to say we're not the chosen. We had the name first, but we're happy to share that with the TV series. But it's chosen.care, and you can find a wealth of just online resources that are tools and different types of resources for you if you are struggling with, you know, certain types of behaviors. We have a lot that's there. But a family who may want to go a step further, you can connect to us through our website or, you know, our phone number that's listed there, and our intake department can talk to you about what the services look like. They're a very easy on-ramp to get connected and start working with one of our care managers. We serve really four different types of families. We serve foster families, adoptive families, kinship caregivers, which is like grandparents who are raising grandchildren, oftentimes unexpectedly thrown into that, or reunified families, biological families who can be safely reunified. And so really all types who may intersect with the child welfare system. And, you know, I would just encourage you, get help sooner than don't wait until it's so late that the wheels are coming off. We often see families come to us who have struggled for years and years, and then there's entrenched patterns in the home that are very challenging to unwind. I was talking with a parent yesterday about that very thing, that he said, we needed what you do 8 or 9 years ago. And now, you know, they're facing just unimaginable choices with their son who's facing, you know, potentially going to a residential facility because it's just not going well at home. So we don't want parents to suffer. We don't want kids to suffer. We want healthy, strong, thriving families. And if we can serve anyone who's listening, we're happy to do that.
Well, thank you so much. You know, before we wrap up today, I know there are probably some parents listening who are feeling discouraged. They may be adoptive foster parents, or they just might be parents on this journey with their kids. And their children might seem stuck emotionally or in their behavior, or, you know, just struggling. So can you give some last words of encouragement for them? And would you be willing to pray for them as well?
Absolutely. You know, before we got started today, we were sharing just a little bit about our own parenting journeys. And I said, you don't have to be a parent of a foster adopted child to be discouraged. I've certainly faced challenging seasons of discouragement with my own children. And what I've learned is that God carries us through, and these seasons and challenges don't last forever. And it's good to have a long-term, long-view perspective, that when you are facing a particular challenge, that it doesn't have to be doom and gloom, and it's not going to last forever, especially as a praying parent and trusting the Lord that He's got you. And He doesn't want us struggling like that with our kids forever either. So He's going to help you, strengthen you, empower you to help your child. And you know, the last thing I'll say for anyone who's listening who may not apply to you, maybe you're just a parent. I know for me, pursuing my kids' hearts and pursuing that connection, just like God is always pursuing connection with us, just makes a world of difference in terms of the reward of the relationships in your home, and would encourage you to seek that connection. And sometimes you don't feel like it. It's like, I don't really want to see that child maybe, or I'm not really happy with them, or I'm not really wanting to connect, but I know that it's worth it. Mm-hmm. Happy to pray. Father God, You are such a good God, and Your word says that You give good gifts to Your children. It also says that You're a father to the fatherless, and Lord, You invite us into that work. And we just thank You for it. We thank You that You are present, and that You delight in us, and that You, because of Jesus, because of the sacrifice of Jesus, You are always pursuing connection with us. Jesus is advocating at the right hand, at Your right hand, on our behalf all the time. You're pursuing our hearts. Lord, would You help us? Would You help us to pursue our kids' hearts the same way that You're pursuing us? Lord, for anyone who is discouraged, just I pray that Your Holy Spirit would come and comfort them. I pray that You would empower them, Lord, that You would strengthen them. Your word says You give power to the weak and strength to the powerless. And so we trust Your promises are true, and we ask that You would come and do that for anyone who is struggling today. God, that You would put people and resources around them to meet their needs. To meet their needs for their families. We ask all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Jenny. It just seems like you've cast a vision for joy that is possible in our homes and healing that can happen. It's just been a really refreshing time to hear what you've had to say. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Joanna. Thanks, Robert. So great to be with you all today. Bless you guys.
Well, same to you. And thank you, friends, for joining us today on our podcast. Joanne and I would love to connect with you as well. Over at our website, growinghometogether.com, you'll find all kinds of resources like powerful prayers for your son or your daughter, and our family conversation cards to help you pray and connect with your kids. At Growing Home Together, we're caring for the soul of your family.
And we're growing home together with you. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Growing Home Together podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and found some valuable insights to help you care for the soul of your family. Remember to check out growinghometogether.com for more resources, and stay tuned for our next episode coming your way soon.